Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Like Stars podcast. I'm your host, Pete Goodman, talking through issues of theology, wisdom, life, scripture, Christianity, all kinds of fun stuff with you together, answering the questions that you send my way. Got a few fun ones we're going to cover on this episode. And as always, if you have a question for the podcast, please send it my way. You can email me, pete@risecitychurch.com. You can also find me on social media, Like Stars on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, all those kind of fun things. Love to hear from you, anything you have going on. Want to let you know something kind of fun. As I've mentioned a few times in previous episodes, I finally finished and released my New Testament survey video series. So I have this both as videos and as an audio podcast. You can listen to it either way. And the whole collection that runs from an intro all the way to the book of Revelations are individual short episodes, usually between 15, 20 minutes at the max, covering every book of the New Testament. Each one gives you kind of background, important information about authorship, who they're writing to, their purpose for writing, any cultural issues, all that kind of stuff. I cover big ideas and main themes of each book, and then do a short walkthrough kind of chapter by chapter. So you can use the New Testament course videos as just listen to them. You can just like this podcast, you can subscribe and listen to them in your car. You can also use them as a resource as you're studying. Maybe you're studying the book of Romans and you just want to dive in and need some help on it. You can open up and listen to the video on Romans, or maybe you want to take this as an opportunity to study the entire New Testament together. And you just say, hey, I'm going to start in Matthew and work all my way through. You could take each video one by one and read them. These videos are actually part of a course of New Testament survey that I teach for seminary students. And so you'd basically be doing what they do as well. Here's how you can find it. If you're watching this video on YouTube, you'll probably notice that I actually have an entire playlist on the Like Stars YouTube channel called New Testament Survey. You can just follow through and watch them all that way. And on the video, you'll see that I have notes and different things you can follow along. So that might be kind of helpful watching the video. I also, though, made them as an audio podcast so you can listen to on the go when you're walking in your car. But they're a separate podcast. They're not actually part of the Like Stars podcast. So you'd have to search New Testament Survey with Dr. Pete Goodman. Or to keep it really easy, the simplest thing you can do, jump on my website, likestars.us, likestars.us, click on New Testament Survey. It's all right there. Apple, Spotify, links to everything, super easy, but check it out. Love to have you. I think it's a great resource and hopefully you'll benefit from it and cover some of the same themes, but really it's just focusing on the New Testament through it all. Well, before I get into your questions, I also want to talk about our sponsor this week. And this episode's sponsor is a special one. It's very near and dear to my heart. The sponsor for today's episode are all of my dear, dear listeners who I love and appreciate, who listened to the previous episode and thought that my really mean reviews were real, that they were actually mean things that human beings wrote about me. The truth is no, just for clarity, they were not real. They arose from my own dementedly odd sense of humor. But here's the deal. I have to say this, no condemnation, no hardship. Like, I felt incredibly loved hearing some of you stand up and support me and like defending me against mean little 7-year-olds. And in kind of like an odd twist of irony, my self-destructive mean reviews about myself actually led to some of you giving me really encouraging feedback. So I apologize if any of you maybe were like, why is he reading these horrible things? It's just me having fun. But I really do. Always, every episode, this is always the funny, silly moment. In honest, genuine sincerity, I really do appreciate some of the feedback I got from the last episode because it was really encouraging. It was like, oh, Pete, I know those people say mean things, but we love you. Like, oh, thank you. I said that about myself, but thank you. I really do appreciate it. So honestly, in all seriousness, if you do have any comments, critiques, want to leave a review, all that stuff, I really do appreciate it. It's, I don't know, it's super encouraging. And if it's just to touch base and let me know you're out there, let me know you're listening. Or if you have a question, please send it my way. I love hearing from you guys. So thank you for all of you who were so nice in the face of my, I don't know what, just me being dumb. Let's dive into some of your questions this week and just work through some really cool and probably important issues that some of you have been asking. So I'm going to start with the first question that I've heard before, and it's not a new thing. Maybe some of you have heard it as well. Someone wrote in and said, Pete, how would you respond to someone who says this? You're only a Christian because you were born in America. If you were born in India, you'd be a Hindu. This person said, it seems like a fairly good argument against Christianity being true and more just that Christianity is part of my culture. How would you respond? And this is actually a really good question. I appreciate you asking it. I've certainly heard it before. It's been used. And I want to come at this question maybe from kind of two perspectives. I want to come at it from where there's some important things to consider, and then maybe where the argument falls apart and that needs to be considered as well. Let me start where I think there might be some truth to this. I actually do think that this thing that we call religion is often, unfortunately, really closely tied, sometimes too closely tied to our upbringing, to just the fact that this is just what I do. And as a Christian who believes Christianity is true, I myself am sometimes confronted with and struggle with a form of Christianity that is just people like, this is just my heritage, this is my culture, like we're Christians, America's a Christian nation. I mean, it's not, but that idea. And I do think that it's so important. And so if somebody kind of came at me with this, I would respond first by saying, look, on the one hand, I think you bring up a really good point. And I would hope that anyone who is a serious, dedicated follower of Jesus has thought through and examined whether they're doing it because they actually see the good and believe in it, or they're just doing it because their parents told them to do it. I don't think anything should just be done or followed blindly because my parents told me to. Doesn't mean my parents might not tell me good, important things, but I still need to examine it. I think it was Socrates who said, the unexamined life is not worth living. I think Christianity needs to be examined. So that would be where I'd start. But then from the actual philosophical, let's actually talk about what you're saying here. People say things like, well, religion, Christianity, it only works when kids are indoctrinated, taught to believe it before they're old enough to think for themselves. Once they do and really think for themselves, then it goes away. I want to give you three responses to this that I was sort of pondering. I'm not off the cuff here. I thought about this a little bit before I started recording. My first response is that I don't think that claim actually holds up to real lived experience. It's sort of one of those like straw men that you create that, well, falls apart when you actually start looking at specific examples. First of all, I don't want to like pigeonhole the person's question, but the person even said like you were born in America, as if America is the Christian nation. Let's keep in mind that Christianity did not start in America. It started in the Middle East, and that Christianity is all over the world. It's in every country in the world. Even in the countries that are adamantly opposed to it and try to stop it, there are Christians meeting in caves and underground churches. It is not just in Christianity. In fact, Christianity is waning in America and growing in other parts, especially Latin America and Africa. So the idea that it's just Christian doesn't make sense. And the fact that it's exploding in other areas that didn't used to be Christian and is waning in areas that it is Christian kind of contradicts this, right? If Christianity continued simply because my parents were Christians, then America would always just keep being Christian, right? The fact that it's fading means that kids aren't necessarily buying into what their parents believed. And the fact that it's growing and expanding in areas like China, where no current adults in China were raised in Christian homes, hardly at all. And yet millions of Christians are coming to Christ. I meet people all the time, even here in America, who weren't raised Christian at all, but found it later in life. And again, people are becoming Christians in all nations all around the world. So the idea that Christianity is only, you're only a Christian because you're born here, it's like, well, that doesn't really quite add up with all the Christians around the world. What do you say to a Muslim who converts to Christianity simply because they had a vision or something? They weren't born into it. It happens all the time. So that'd be my first thing. Here's the second thing, and this gets a bit philosophical. That argument defeats itself because you can turn it on its head. If the beliefs that you hold are only because you were born into them, well, does that mean that an atheist who's born into an atheist home is only an atheist because of their parents and not because atheism is true? So the rejection of God could just be as much you were born into a house that rejected God. Where is the line? Is atheism only the result of the home or country? If you're born into an atheistic society like North Korea, does that disprove atheism? Because so many people in North Korea are atheists, they force it on their population. Does that mean that atheism isn't true? Well, you see what's kind of happened. The argument's kind of fallen apart. Anything that a culture is taught to believe, the opposite, it could be. So yeah, some cultures teach Christianity is true, but I mean, what about atheism? So belief or non-belief seem just as much connected to how you're raised. Rather, I think it's important to just say, like, there's clearly something connected to how you're raised. That's a big deal. But that doesn't necessarily dictate whether something is true or not. And this is my third point that's probably the most important. And I would really try to hammer this home with whoever was going to ask me this question. Human beings believe all kinds of things that their parents taught them, which we actually think are true, right? You believe many things that other people in the world don't simply because you were taught them. Let me give you an example. When you get sick, okay, what do? You go to a medical doctor. Do you go to a shaman or a witch doctor who's going to like cast bones and try to, you know, whatever, bite you with a snake? Do you get leeches put on you to like suck the bad humors out of your blood? No. Why? Because you were raised in a country, if you live in America, in Washington, you were raised in a country and a culture that believes that medical science is better than that, those kind of things. So is it wrong? Is medical science a lie? Do you only believe it because you were raised where there's medical science? And if you grew up in some, you know, tiny remote village and some island in the Pacific, would you actually believe that a witch doctor is where you should go? Well, you actually might, yeah. Would you be right? I don't think so. I actually think that modern medicine is good and mostly true and good for us and a better decision. The fact that I was born into a society that believes in and practices modern medicine doesn't mean I shouldn't believe it. It more means that I should be kind of grateful that I am and just, I don't know, yeah, live with a sense of thankfulness. If you're maybe an American citizen, do you believe freedom and democracy are the best way to live? I think this is my gut feeling. Maybe some of you, I think most of you listening to this podcast are like, well, yeah, of course I do. Well, but do you only believe that because you were raised in a culture that taught you that? Oh, well, that's kind of interesting. If you were raised in communist Russia in the 70s, would you actually believe that communism is a better way to live? Yeah, you probably would. If you were raised in a communist nation, you would probably believe that's the best way. Is it? Or is freedom and democracy actually better? You know, do you see what's happened here? You've put yourself in a corner. If you say it's only true, it's not true. You only think it's true because you're raised in it. What do you do with things that actually are true that you were raised in? What do you do with the parts of your childhood, the things that you were taught as a kid that actually are true? Do you just abandon them? No, I think what you need to do is you examine them. You ask serious questions. You don't just take it. And I've talked about this before on this podcast. You don't just take it as blind faith because mom and dad said so. You say, let me think about this. Is it? Let me think about communism, which is something we've talked about also. Let me think about other forms of medicine. Let me think about other forms of religions. Let me think about Christianity itself. Examine it. You don't just say, well, I was taught this, so I'm not going to question it. That's not healthy. But you also don't say, well, because this is what I was taught, it must not be true. Well, that's silliness as well. The better thing to do is to examine it, to actually say, what do I think about Christianity? Why do I believe it? What do I find convincing about it? And I'm hoping that when I do this podcast, I can offer things for that for you, that you don't just accept it for no reason, but that you also don't abandon it when you actually examine it, because there is good in it. Christianity does teach us that we're to teach our kids about it. We're to pass it along to our children. But I think it's a mistake to think that means that the child is never supposed to actually think for themselves or ask questions. I don't see that being the message of the Bible. I think the Bible wants me to help my children see the goodness of Christianity and why it's worth following. So when they examine it and when they begin to ask questions, it's not just because I told you so or dad said so, but because it actually makes sense. And that would be my answer to that question. All right, let's do another one. This one's kind of a fun one. Someone wrote in and said, I've been reading the book of Psalms and came across something interesting. They wrote this. In Psalm 98, the author talks about rejoicing and celebrating God. It's all about sing to the earth and stuff. And at the end of the chapter, it says this, to sing before him, for he comes to judge the earth, which it does. Sounds pretty harsh to me. Why would God judging the earth be something to celebrate and sing about? Wouldn't that be something terrible, destructive, all these kind of things? Okay. And when I read this question, I got to be honest, I loved it. I was like, oh, that's great. Because I have actually been reading the Psalms and I was in the early 90s. And so, I got to it. And I actually had recently read Psalm 97, where there was this great line that said, the Lord reigns, let the earth rejoice. And I think there's a connection there. So let me unpack this a little bit. When the psalmist is speaking about God's reign, God's rule, God's kingdom, things like that, he's referring to the idea that God is in charge, okay, that God is in command, that God is holding things together. And for the psalmist, that is a good thing. And if you've listened to, especially the first two or three podcast episodes I did, even last year, where I talked about the Garden of Eden, what is good, creation, this is going to be a big theme of my Like Stars book that's coming out very soon. The idea that the world is a better place when God is in charge, when it's being done the way that God wants it, everything is better. So when the Lord reigns, when the Lord is in charge, when he rules, we should rejoice and celebrate. Now, that's a little bit different, though, than judgment. And I see what you're saying. Like, so wait, we should sing for joy because God judges? Isn't God's judgment like a terrible, horrible thing? Now, especially modern Western Christians, those of you that maybe grew up in more of a form of Christianity that talked a lot about end times and the tribulation and the bowls of judgment and all those kind of things. It's all very like scary apocalyptic horrors kind of things. And I'm not really, maybe I'll do an episode on that. I've thought about it. But here's what I want you to think. I want you to take that and kind of hang on a little loosely, but push it aside for a second. When we see the word judgment in especially the Old Testament, it can be used a couple of different ways. It can be used to adjudicate something in the sense of there's a moment where two women come before King Solomon and argue about whose baby, they argue about who owns the baby, and he makes a decision. That's a judgment there. I make a judgment, it's your baby, that kind of thing. There can also be the use of judgment in the sense of somebody being convicted of a crime, they've been judged and sentenced kind of thing. In this context, what you're really seeing is to judge the earth is more like to bring it back to what it's supposed to be. And I want you to think of the word judges as the book of the Bible, okay, just for a second. In the Old Testament, you see the story of the children of Israel leaving slavery in Egypt with Moses, traveling in the wilderness, and then eventually taking the promised land, the book of Joshua, settling in the land, and then everything kind of goes bad. And the entire book known as Judges, when you read the book of Judges, what you see is again and again, the people fall into really difficult situations where no one's really in charge, no one's leading well, and things are just going bad, and their enemies are constantly coming in and killing them and raiding their territory, and it's like everyone's constantly living in fear because no one's safe, there's no standing army. And what happens is the people will cry out to God and say, God, save us, rescue us. Like, we're not safe. This isn't a good way to live. We can't sleep at night. And what God will do is he'll raise up a judge to lead the people to some kind of freedom or to defeat their enemies, at least for a season. So in that, think of it that way. The prayer, the call for God to judge is not a punish my enemies. There's some of that there, but it's more about, and this is the key, if you read all of Psalm 98, again and again, you'll see the word salvation, save us. Things are not as they should be. Things are a mess. And if you continue the very verse you read, let them sing before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. The next line is, he will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples with equity. That's an English translation of a word that in fairness, goodness, rightness. The word righteousness means it comes from rightness, that which is right. So to judge the earth in this way is to set things right. The people are living in a way that is unhealthy, and they're struggling, and they're in fear, and they're dying, and they're probably starving, all these things. It's like, God, come and save us. Judgment in this sense is not like I'm going to throw lightning bolts down on sinners. It's more about saying, I'm going to step into this broken situation and save you and redeem you and restore you. How am I going to do that? Well, I'm going to do that by being in charge and by calling people back to faithfulness to me. When the Lord reigns, the people rejoice. When people follow God's ways, the people rejoice. There's righteousness. Now think, put these two things together. Connect the dots with me here. Why are things better when the Lord reigns? Here's why. Because God is good. God loves us. He loves his creation. He loves his people. And he gives us wisdom, words, truth, to live a certain way, believing that that brings goodness to people. So when God says, live this way and not this way, live by X, not YZ, he's saying living this way, following this path, actually brings good things to people, fairness, rightness. There is a rightness about it. So God is saying, if you'll trust me and live your lives the way I'm telling you to, rather than suffering and violence and murder and all these kind of things, you'll actually find goodness. You'll actually find that living yourself and as a community of people aligned with my lordship and my leadership, God is saying, brings about goodness. It brings about rightness. That is salvation, calling people back to the ways of God. So for God to step in and be the leader himself, not to raise up a judge like Samson or some flawed hero, but himself to step up and call the people and say, follow me, I will show you good things, is something to celebrate. Now, there's also a side of justice here and judgment and righteousness that does deal with the fact that the world is not just broken. In some ways, it's very evil and people are mistreating each other. There's a bonus episode of Like Stars that I posted where I gave a message about divine violence in the Old Testament. And I quoted a famous Eastern European philosopher, theologian named Miroslav Volf. And Volf essentially makes this case where he said for so much of his life, he wrestled and struggled with the idea that God would ever do anything bad or punish or anything. But then he heard more and more stories about his father suffering under communism and the death marches. And then he saw his own nation of Croatia being ravaged and abused and atrocities. And he said, now I can't imagine a good God who wouldn't step in, who wouldn't judge and set things right. Not just punishment, but set things right. No, this is not how things are supposed to be. So in the face of true evil and a longing for righteousness and justice, the cry for God to intervene is immense. And I think it's important, and I'll add this on the side, I think it's important that those of us who live, let's call it American suburbia maybe, right? And I'm reiterating some things I talked about in that other bonus episode, but when anything happens to you, when anything like bad, somebody breaks into your home, you can pick up a cell phone and literally on my cell phone, I can push one button, one button on the side and instantly call. Someone will answer the phone. I can tell them what's wrong and they will send armed police officers to my home to administer justice and protect me. I mean, just driving to work today, I passed three police officers roaming around my community, ensuring safety and justice. Firefighters, we have I live in San Diego. There's massive military bases here. People committed to safety and justice and holding evil and wickedness accountable. You just need to recognize that. Recognize, go back to my last question, not that it's bad, but that you should be thankful for it, but not everyone has it. If you didn't live in a world that you could call 911, if there were no standing army to protect you, you know, you think of like apocalyptic shows like Walking Dead or things like that, where the whole civilization is kind of broken down and people are all on their own and it turns into kind of like a Mad Max world where street gangs do whatever they want and oppress people. Like, imagine how much you would cry out for justice if that were you. And Americans make science fiction TV shows about post-apocalyptic worlds. But the reality is the horrors that we dream up in those kind of, fictional shows are people's real lives in other parts of the world, even today. There are people living today who don't have justice, who don't live in safety, who at any minute could lose their lives and their families' lives. Though to sort of call out for God to step in and bring goodness and justice, it is for an oppressed people, you could just imagine. And you and I have to acknowledge, and it's why I wanted to say this, just be willing to acknowledge and be grateful for the fact that you're not that oppressed and you live in probably the most fair and just society that the human race has ever created. And I know some of you are like, well, you're just, making America. And no, America's got its problems. But living in the Western world today, at no point in human history have human beings ever had it so well and been so safe, so comfortable, and had such a clear system of justice that actually worked. What you read when you pick up Psalms is 3,000 years old, when nobody had justice. There was no fairness and everyone was struggling. So you have to take it through that lens. Is that fair? So the earth does rejoice when God intervenes. There is reason to sing when God judges. When the Lord reigns, we should all be happy. And ultimately, that's the end of the Bible story, right? Like, where is all this going? At the end of the Bible story, God is ruling and reigning through his faithful subjects who are doing life the way that he calls them to. And the world once again looks like paradise, the Garden of Eden we were created for. And that's something to have hope in and look forward to. Okay, let's do one more question. We got a little more time here. Here's a good one. It goes back to some of the examine life, examining Christianity thing. I call this kind of like apologetic question. How do you respond to the claim that people only believe in God because they want it to be true? What some might be called like wish fulfillment. Like, you just want this to be true. You just want there to be some magical Santa Claus in the sky who loves you and makes you feel good about yourself, and you don't have to worry about death because, oh, the magical death fairy is going to resurrect you and you get to live forever. That's why you believe in it, because you want it to be true. We invent God because we want meaning. And many atheistic philosophers throughout time have had different variations of this. Marx talked about it just being our way of dealing with our oppression. Freud talked about us creating God because we long for a father figure, all this kind of stuff, right? How would we respond to the claim that belief in God and Christianity in general is just wish fulfillment? Christians even say, it's almost too good to be true. Well, doesn't that mean it's probably not true? Grace, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Let me give you, I think there might be a couple ways to look at this question. And I'll quote one of my heroes of literature and thought, C.S. Lewis. First, it is true that this is something worth examining. Like, is that safe to say? Sometimes when I hear Christians answer these kind of questions, like, oh, that's dumb. No, think about it. Yeah, think about it. It's a good thing to process. I've processed it. I've processed whether I just want this to be true. Who wouldn't want, eternity to be true and a God that loves us to be true? But here's the deal. Just because we wish for something and want something to be true doesn't mean it exists. On the other hand, it's not true that wanting it means it doesn't exist. Now you're like, okay, my eyes just crossed. All right, you follow me with this. In fact, more often than not, when it comes to reality, your desires and your wants point to things that exist. Imagine having a desire or a want for something that wasn't real. I mean, okay, I could think of a few things. I Have you ever have you ever found yourself daydreaming about having a time machine and what you would change and go back in time? Sure. So you might desire a time machine. That's not real. You might wish for that. Maybe, I don't know, I wish for the ability to breathe underwater or something. I don't know. Whatever. Put those things aside. Most of the time, the things that you have a desire for actually exist. There is something that can fulfill your desire. I have a desire for food, for water, for air to breathe. I have a desire for love. I have a desire for companionship. Why? Well, because all those things exist. And in fact, while I've heard people argue against Christianity by saying, oh, you just want it to be true, so you're making it up, C.S. Lewis actually used that as an argument for Christianity in a very, what I thought was a really profound, interesting way. C.S. Lewis said this, I'm quoting him. He said, creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. Creatures are not born with desires. We don't have desire for things unless the thing we're desiring is actually real. It's our desire for food that kind of proves that food exists. And for Lewis, our longing for a better world, for something deeper, for more meaning, points to the reality that maybe we were made for a different kind of world. Maybe that there is a meaning to be had. And a lot of times on this podcast, I've talked about the idea of goodness. What is good? The very notion that your brain thinks there's goodness out there seems to suggest that goodness is out there. The very notion that you would even have a thought of like purpose or meaning, I need to find my purpose. I'm always intrigued when atheists talk about their purpose. You don't have a purpose if there's no created reason for your existence. You don't have any meaning. And yet you have a desire for purpose. There's something inside of you that longs for purpose and meaning. Why would we have that if there was no purpose? And, you know, maybe you could argue and say, well, I don't know, we're just hopeless creatures and so be it. Okay, maybe. But I also think it's possible to flip that and say, or maybe it's because there is purpose. Maybe. Now get this. What if the fact that so many human beings feel empty and lost and like they're drifting with no real meaning and they're miserable and depressed because of it is because you were actually created and designed and intended to live with purpose, to live with a sense of meaning, to live with a sense of fulfillment and goodness inside of you that only our Creator brings us. And maybe the reason why so many people feel so empty and alone and just hit their mid-40s and leave their families and buy Corvettes and try to find goodness is because goodness is out there and they feel it, but they just don't know where to find it. And maybe it's not a sign that there is no God, but maybe it's one of the clearest signs there is a God, and that purpose and fulfillment and meaning are real things that can be had and grasped, that you can actually find them, that you can actually live with purpose because you were made for it, and your desire for it is because God created you for it. And when you don't have it, there's something wrong. That when you're not living with meaning, that when you're not living your life with a sense of, yes, I know why I'm doing this. I know why I'm alive. This is good. This is right. When you don't have that, you feel off kilter. You feel something is missing. Something is wrong. There's something lacking inside of you. The feeling that something is lacking inside of you does not make God wish fulfillment. It makes God true fulfillment. Let me say that again. The feeling that you're lacking purpose and lacking meaning and lacking the sense of love and belonging is not a sign that you've made up a God to fill those things. It's a sign that God created you to fulfill those things with Himself. And that when you actually begin to walk in line with how God created you, with what He has for your life, you find those things that are missing and empty. You're not just making them up. You're actually becoming more like what you were created to be. So I would say that's my biggest thing is just to say I think our wishes are pointing to something that is actually missing in many of our lives. If purpose wasn't real and meaning wasn't real, why do we have a longing for them? I mean, apes and chimpanzees and lions don't think about their purpose. You and I do because we actually have purpose. And when we're not living in it, we feel a sense that it's missing. Of course, there's another way I could respond to this question as well, just to be clear. And this is another way that I think even Lewis and others have gone about it. That's one half of the equation. that God actually fulfills great things inside of us that we're made for. Here's the other side, though. What about all the uncomfortable parts of religion? Why would we invent a religion that calls us to die to ourselves, to carry a cross, to suffer, and to love our enemies and turn the other cheek? Listen, I, again, like I talked about in my first question, just as much as an atheist could use this as an argument in Christianity, I could just as easily use the same argument against atheism. Atheism could be, and I actually think is, you fulfilling your wish for autonomy. Atheism is you fulfilling your own desire to run your own life and not have a God or anyone else tell you what to do, because Christianity is actually kind of hard. It's worth it. It's fulfilling, but it's kind of hard at times. Jesus asks me to do things all the time that I don't want to do. Why would I make that up? Right? Why would I make that? Like, if I was going to make up my own religion, it wouldn't be me constantly choosing to have to give up things. Like, and let me give you a crass example. You know, I'm in my 40s now, and so it's a little bit different. But in my early 20s, being a single, unmarried man, the idea that I would make up a religion that told me not to be sexually active is kind of stupid, right? Why would I do that? Why would I just create a whole, I wasn't fulfilling any wishes by being celibate in my 20s, waiting to get married. Quite the opposite. I was denying a lot of my wishes. And that continues today in many parts of my life. This is kind of random, but I'll throw it out there. It's a podcast. I was thinking the other day, I drove up next to somebody who had a really nice truck. I live in East County, San Diego, where trucks are a big deal. And I don't know. I don't really consider myself, I listen to country music, but I don't know, a really nice Toyota Tacoma. I used to have one. And I had this thought in my head. My thought was, man, I wish I had that. And here's the thought that followed it. The thought that followed it was, you know, I actually could have a really nice truck if I didn't give away 10% of my money. I had that thought. I bet, you know, if I didn't actually give God 10% of my income, man, I'd have a nice truck. I'd probably have my house almost paid off. I could probably go on nicer vacations. That's a chunk of money, 10% of my money. Who makes that up? Why would I make that up? Why would I just be like, I'm gonna make up a religion where I have to sacrifice and give and love people that I don't like? It doesn't make any sense. It's illogical. Yes, there are aspects of Christianity that fulfill parts of my soul that I wish for. But there are also parts of Christianity that make me do things that I don't want at all and actually call me to deny things that I wish for. So when you fully examine Christianity from that perspective, you see that I'm not using this argument to either defend or to promote, or I'm not saying like, this is proof of Christianity or this is proof it's not true. I'm not saying it at all. I'm just saying the argument kind of falls apart. There's just not a lot of weight to it. When you really examine it and apply it and think it through, yeah, there are parts of Christianity that seem like wish fulfillment, but that just to me suggests there's a part of me that was created to have those things fulfilled. On the flip side, there's parts of it that don't do wish fulfillment. And that shows me that I'm making a decision to do something that's hard and isn't what I want. The entire message of Christianity, it could be summed up with surrender what you want and live the way God wants, right? In order to bring about the world that God wants, trusting that it's better for you. So I guess in that sense, wish fulfillment, sure. Am I wishing that there's a better world and I'll find it? Okay, yeah. But my desire for it, my longing for it seems to point to the fact that it must be real, that I must have been made for it, and I'm longing for something that's missing. Okay, good questions. Guys, keep them coming. Any more, I'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to ask a question of the podcast or make a comment, email me, pete@risecitychurch.com. You can also find me on social media. Again, the entire New Testament survey course, video course, is available on YouTube, the Like Stars YouTube channel. or on Apple, Spotify, all those podcasts. You can find them at likestars.us. And one final thing, just to let you know, I know I've been talking about it for a long time, but I'm really close to my book coming out. So I'm excited about that. I'm recording this right at the end of September 2023, and I'm probably about 4 to 5 weeks for the release. So in the next few days, probably later this week or soon, depending on when you're listening to this, I'm actually going to be releasing some information about how you can get a free copy of it. And maybe if you want to even kind of help me get the word out. And so be looking for that. It'll be coming out on social media areas, and I might talk about it on the next episode. Until then, I appreciate all of you. Thank you again for your wonderful, loving comments when you thought I was being destroyed by evil 7-year-olds. I do appreciate it. Love you all. And we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks, guys. Bye. You consume me. And-